Blog Talk Radio.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
Keep you safe.
Keep you close,
and close to the Lord.
Don't pay heed to temptation. For His hands are so cold.
Ice cold.
You gotta help me keep the devil
way down in the hole.
Way down in the hole.
Yeah.
Down in the
wow. It is June 7th already.
Down in the hole.
2011. Washington, D.C., the planet Earth, third planet from the sun. You got to help me keep the devil way down in the hole. That's my man and yours, Tom Waits. Down in the hole. All right, tonight is history night, because yesterday I threw some stuff out there about the stock market crash of 1929. And a couple of folks, like Cougar, wanted to know a little bit more. So I thought I'd get into that a little bit about some popular myths that are out there about the crash. But first, you know, there's a problem. There's a problem with having a president in the White House with virtually no experience running anything, and even less firsthand understanding of how a free enterprise system works and grows. You know, the problem turns into a full-fledged delusion when he, the president, when his expert advice pushes him along the path of failed Keynesian economics. Why can't he, indeed, why can't they see it? You know, I don't necessarily think that Barack Obama has bad intentions. I just think that his lack of experience and his theoretical approach completely blinds him to how a free enterprise system really works and thrives. I assume that I'll go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'll go ahead and assume that he mistakenly believes that his approach is the right one. Because of his delusions about what truly creates growth in the United States, in the U.S. economy. You see, he simply cannot understand how business people think and act. When he thinks he does understand, he attributes their behaviors and actions to all the wrong motives. For example, Sir Winston Churchill described this misunderstanding really well, and I quote, "I contend that for a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket trying to lift himself up by the handle," end quote. I mean, and that sums it up right there. And yet time and time again, shown by his remarks in State of the Union speeches, Obama uses different words like investment instead of spending to describe the same delusion, a failed solution. Didn't we invest in that massive stimulus package where the president said that if in fact we invested in his massive stimulus package that unemployment wouldn't go over 8%? And didn't he also say that if his stimulus package didn't bring us out of the recession and didn't create growth and jobs that he would be a one-term president? He actually said that. Well, why doesn't he start packing his bags? Listen, insufficient capacity to generate revenue and profit growth is one reason to spend and hire. Reaping rapid cost savings from the spending is another. Otherwise, a wise business will hang on to its cash until the right opportunity comes along. Someone needs to explain to President Obama that hiring is a dependent outcome. When you need more help than you can get with current staffing, overtime and temporary help, you hire more people, and not until then. And no amount of presidential jawboning to the Chamber of Commerce or any other group of business will change that. Barack Obama cannot force businesses to hire people. He can't do that. Or does he think he can? Is he in fact so delusional that he thinks that he can? But further, Obama is really good at talking the talk. He's really good at talking the talk. And he, how shall I put this? He speaks as a moderate, thus misleading Americans that he makes policy as a big government. Then he makes policy as a big government tax and spend liberal. And this is not just bad for the country. Thus, Obama's either morally wrong or just fails to understand, whichever the case, what this president is doing is bad for America. It's just simply bad. And the mood of the country reflects this. Next is Obama's recent deception about reducing bad or unnecessary regulations. In basketball parlance, if you will, a sport at which he's fairly adept, his behavior is akin to a head fake, indicating a move in one direction while planning and making a move in a totally different direction. Obama speaks and writes glowingly about eliminating regulations that have become unreasonable burdens on business, but then acts barely at all, just enough to find a couple of innocuous regulations to remove so he can point to them as a success. The guy is either delusional or stupid or leading America down a path that is ultimately dangerous and destructive for this country. Whoever thought the saying, quote, "it's the economy, stupid," end quote, from James Carville in 1992 would become a staple in presidential elections presidential elections 10 to 20 years later. And you know, that expression made its way into the campaign in 2008. And according to Carville, it could be the theme for the 2012 campaign as well. In an appearance on Monday on Imus in the Morning on the Fox Business Network, the former Clinton advisor said that, based on the May job numbers, if the unemployment picture doesn't improve in 2012, could be a rough year for the president. He says, and I quote, "I don't think anybody, if 54,000 new jobs is the new standard, it's going to be very, very rough for Barack Obama to win in 2012. But Barack Obama's saying all is well. Barack Obama's saying everything's going to be just great. We have a call on the line. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
So I apologize. I was only able to hear what you were talking about through waiting on the queue because for some reason I'm not able to. The show's not coming up on the site, at least for me. And I tried several times, but anyway.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I wanted to make a few comments. The first is, of course, I don't think it's, you know, Obama's not making any decisions. Our presidents are puppets. We don't have a true democracy. We have a two-party mafia in Washington. We have a fascist government. It's controlled by corporate America. It's controlled by Israel and the Zionist interests in this country. And until people realize that, nothing's going to change. Absolutely nothing is going to change. And I say this as an expert in economics, in investments, in healthcare. People are not getting the truth. Our media is the most controlled in the developed world. They would have you believe that they have serious debates about healthcare and this and that in the economy. And the fact is that all they have are hacks and shills that pretend to take the opposing position. People are not getting the truth because our media is paid off by corporate America and also Washington, of course. This is the reality. This is why there's so much disinfo out there. People don't even understand the realities of healthcare, which is a very complicated topic. And now you see what's going on with Washington. We have fought all these useless wars in the Middle East for Israel's benefit, costing trillions of dollars. And now Washington is saying, well, we're going to take that money that we can't pay back out of your Social Security and your Medicare. And they're attacking Medicare as a problem. And the fact is, Medicare is not a problem. The problem is with the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
They won't address the healthcare industry, no matter who's in office, Democrat or Republican. Every bill that's passed always favors the healthcare industry. And people are going to wake up some point in the future, and they're going to realize that it's over.
Well, that's true. But when you say it's over, what do you mean over? What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't mean we're going to disappear, or I don't mean that we're going to be living like, you know, extremely impoverished nations. What I do mean is already we have – our living standards have been ratcheted down a couple of notches indefinitely,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to get worse. Let me give you an example. Already in this country, the number one form of bankruptcy or the number one cause of bankruptcy is due to medical bills. Accounting for 50% of all personal bankruptcies, coming in at 1 million per year. In addition to that, and this is not my, this is Harvard research. In addition to that, according to Harvard, anywhere between 58 to 72% of those filing for medical bankruptcy had full health insurance. The fact is, our healthcare industry is a complete racket. There's no such thing in this country as health insurance. It's prepaid medical that sticks you with the bill, a big part of the bill at the end of the day.
Well, hasn't Barack Obama addressed that for us all? Hasn't he made it all better?
Problem, The problem with the Obama's bill, the people that are against it, unfortunately, I think they're against it for the wrong reason. They're against it because they're on the GOP side. And the fact is the GOP don't have a solution either. Like I said, any bill that gets passed is always going to benefit the industry. That is a fact. Just look at history. And you look at the healthcare lobbyists are the second most powerful lobbyist group in Washington, next to, of course, AIPAC.
Now, do you think that wait a minute. Now, let me ask you this. It's your contention that Americans are against the health care because – give it to me again.
Well, subconsciously, they're against it because of they are on the Republican side. Of course, superficially, they see the flaws, but they're using that as an excuse. In other words – What are the Republicans going to do? Well, we saw what George Bush did with Medicare Part D. You see, the solution, neither party is going to address the root cause. The root cause is addressing the healthcare industry, the massive inflation of costs that we experience every year. Every time you buy a prescription drug in this country, you're subsidizing the cost of prescription drugs for the rest of the world because we pay the highest price for prescription drugs in the world.
Let me just stop you right there.
That's inexcusable.
I would suggest that the people that are in the chat room and me particularly don't agree with Barack Obama's health care proposal or his health care law because it forces me to do something that I don't want to do. And in addition to that, I have a healthcare plan that I like, and I'm being treated very well. I can see my doctor tomorrow. If I call him tomorrow, I can go in and see him anytime I want. I have specialists at my disposal. I have my healthcare set. And I'm happy with it just the way that it is. I would submit, honestly, that there are a great many people in the chat room right now who feel the same way as I do. And we believe, and I can speak for some of the folks in the room, that this plan has nothing to do with Barack Obama being a Democrat. It has everything to do with him wanting to take us into a healthcare system that has pretty much failed everywhere it's been tried, just like socialism, Marxism, and communism has failed everywhere it's been tried. So now,
no.
Go on.
Can I interrupt you for a second and ask you a question?
Sure.
And I want to get back to your healthcare issue, your healthcare coverage, and so forth.
Sure.
And by the way, I'll go ahead and say yes. You like your healthcare today. You don't know what it's going to be like tomorrow. And I want to ask you some questions about that in a second. But what I wanted to bring up is that are you hopefully you're not referring to, you're saying the healthcare system that Obama has put forward into law has failed everywhere. Are you implying that his healthcare law is universal healthcare?
I'm implying that it's headed in that direction. For example, you asked me the question. Let me respond. Just today, it has been revealed that a major portion of this country's corporations, companies, are planning to drop its employees from their health care, employer sponsored health care, and simply pay the $2,000 fine, thus leaving a great many of America's workforce to file for these government exchanges. That's already in the news as of today.
I think that you're missing the point. The point is, it's not.
What's the point?
Whether it's Obama's care, the point is Washington is not attacking the problem. Just like the same with the economy, they're not addressing the fundamental problems because the corporations run this country, and we don't have universal health care, nothing close to that. And the fact is, if America ever wants to be competitive in trade again, we have to have universal health care, because you cannot have a system of free and fair trade when your trading partners do not play by the same rules. And this is why employers are shifting jobs overseas, because it's much less expensive for them. Healthcare is a large portion of that. Healthcare costs are the fastest growing expenditures for corporations in this country. Not to mention the fact that universal care is much more cost efficient, there's much less fraud, much fewer medical errors, and the health statistics are much better, because you have a party, the government, who has a financial interest in keeping you healthy. Therefore, you have more preventative medicine. In this country, people typically, on average, change jobs over their lifetime 10 to 13 times. Therefore, United Healthcare knows that they're not going to probably have you as their policyholder at the time when you really need them. So they don't really care about.
How do you know that?
Well, I'm just think about it. First of all, people are shifting jobs, they're getting laid off. When that happens, they change health care providers. Second of all, when you need health care the most, the private health care system is off the hook, because people go into Medicare. You see, you're paying premiums all these years, like me, for instance, which I canceled my health care. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because I got a 40% increase in a two-year period without ever seeing my doctor, without having any family history of any type of disease or medical condition.
Okay.
And it ticked me off, because this is why some people who can afford health care insurance, they don't want to pay, because it's a black hole. If you don't know that for sure that you can afford to pay health care for the rest of your life, the insurance, then it serves no purpose to have it, because
Hold on now. Let me get a question in here. I don't believe that this current health care law is the solution to any of our problems.
Of course not.
And do you?
Of course not. It's a miserable joke. But my point is that the other party is going to have something equally as bad. It's going to be marketed differently. Okay. The point is that they're not addressing
the root cause. If you were the president of the United States, or you were a senior senator, what would your proposal be?
If I was president, we would have a much better economy and much better country. I can tell you that, because I actually predicted this depression in a book 5 years ago. Details, including the prediction Fannie and Freddie would get bailed out.
Okay.
I knew all this.
And the name of your book?
America's Financial Apocalypse. The media mm-hmm. banned me. Okay. I also wrote a book on healthcare.
All right. I just want to get that out there, so folks could.
Look. There's a lot of excerpts of the healthcare book on a website called AmericasHealthcareSolution.com.
Right.
In the first half of the book, I just pick apart the whole industry. The difficulty understanding in healthcare is that people typically latch on to one aspect based upon their personal experience. The problem is that there's problems within each of the segments. There's problems with the drug makers, the health insurers. Right. There's problems with the government. There's problems with the physicians, the HMOs, all that stuff. So until you understand fully, it's very difficult for people to know the solution. I positioned a solution, not the solution, but a primary part of the solution being telemedicine.
All right. Well, let me get. Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't mean to be rude. I'd just like to get to your answer. What would you propose
for
a healthcare solution?
Well, first of all, the main problems in this country, which I addressed 5 years ago in a book, which the media banned me, of course, and I'm not even an author. I'm a Wall Street insider. They don't want the truth. Anytime anyone speaks the truth, they ban you, because you're going to attack the reality. The solution is as follows. First of all, number one, get rid of all lobbyists.
Okay.
As long as we have lobbyists in this country, your vote doesn't matter. Corporations control the politicians.
All right.
And I think it's pretty obvious.
I understand.
Number
but
two,
what would your solution be?
Well, no, that's the first.
Okay.
The second is to restructure free trade like Obama promised.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Restructure free trade to an extent, either restart adding tariffs to imports,
mm-hmm.
or else we make the laws of trade equal. I mean, we cannot have, when India and China don't have to pay for OSHA and EPA regulations, when they're not having to pay for Social Security taxes, payroll taxes, health, employee benefits, of course U.S. companies are going to send jobs overseas. We have to play on an equal ground, okay? And the third solution, which is identified as the number two cause, is to restructure health care. If we spent the same amount of money as Canada, as England, as Western Europe, per GDP on health care, we would start recording an annual budget surplus by 2020. Of course, we spend twice as much than those nations, and those nations have better health care. The people live longer, they have a lower infant mortality rate. The healthcare statistics are mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And yet, but when you hear people talk about universal health care, they always bring up Canada. They never bring up Japan. They never bring up England. They never bring up Western Europe because they don't want you to know the reality that they have far superior health care.
Well, hold on. Caller, what is your name? I don't want to just call you caller. I'd like to call you back some name if that's possible. What is your name? Yeah.
Mike.
Mike, got it. Mike, it's well documented that England's healthcare system is failing. And in fact, if memory serves,
failing in what regard?
In that there are not enough doctors available to service the sick, and in fact that there are waiting periods for basic services. That was just hold on a minute. The British, that was just in the news just about I think it was just about 2 weeks ago.
Well, listen, that's the media. Who's the media? How does the media get their money? They get their money through corporate ad sponsorships. The fact is that I challenge anyone out there to try and become a new patient, and you're going to get a waiting list.
Okay.
Especially in, for instance, the psychiatry,
mm-hmm.
a huge waiting list, and that's a problem in itself. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these, we have physician shortages. Did you know that we don't even have free market healthcare, and we haven't had it for decades in this country? Did you know that they talk about all this physician shortage that we're going to have? The AMA intentionally creates annual shortages. Intentionally. They've
and
only
why
added 15.
Why do they? Why do they do that?
Well, because they want to control the physician salaries. They want to make the jobs stable. That's not free market. That's mm-hmm. socialism. So, for instance, it's well known that during economic contractions, during recessions, the healthcare industry is one of the, if not the, main driver of job growth.
Yeah.
And it's been that way during this recessionary period of what I labeled I predicted this depression that we're in 5 years ago, and it is a depression. And the recession is still ongoing. The recession never ended back in the summer last year. That's a complete lie. We're on the 42nd month of the recession.
Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I really am. Would you hold that thought for just a second? I'd like to introduce an additional caller to the line, and then get him in on the conversation. Would that be okay?
See how it goes. But I mean, you know, I'm not going to be jacked.
You just stay there. 111. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Show, and Mike.
Hey, Doc Jones, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good. How are you?
I'm fine. This is flyover territory, but everybody calls me Eric. One thing that I noticed that Mike didn't mention, it's the same thing that Hillary didn't want to mention 18 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and that is frivolous tort reform.
Yeah.
Frivolous tort for medical malpractice is just out of control in this country. And it's been going on for 26 years. I'm sorry.
Can I respond to that?
Are you finished with your thought, Eric?
I was just going to point out that it's been rampant for the last 26 years, and I can't remember the name of the law firm
mm-hmm.
that brought forth all of those malpractice torts to the New York Circuit Court. I wish I could remember them now.
But they dumped right, like 3,500 lawsuits within an 18-month period.
All right.
You know, they were one of the first ambulance chaser East Coast big marketing commercial type endeavors ever.
Mike,
and
you want to go
no
ahead?
One,
yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead and respond, Mike.
The 2 points find that. First of all, that is one of the predominant myths out there disseminated by the medical industrial complex and the bought off media that tort reform is the cause of high health care costs. It's just simply not true.
Why
I
is it not true?
I address that in my book. Well, you can look at the Congressional Budget Office studies that say eliminating medical liability lawsuits would only cut 0.5% of health care costs. Now let's look at that scenario. You have to have the threat of prosecution if you screw up. Look at Wall Street. Wall Street has no threat of any type of criminal activities being pursued against them. This is why these things go on. We have a legal. I don't agree with the administration.
All right, Mike. Hold on, Mike. Go ahead, Eric.
They don't have any threat at all. That's called the Federal Trade Commission and all the regulations that go with that.
Mike?
Right? What?
Well, it's the same thing like whenever people say, hey, I'm being forced to pay taxes at gunpoint. Technically, that's true because if you don't pay your taxes and if you, you know, don't follow the rules like you're supposed to, yeah, guys in blue are going to come to your door and they're going to serve you with papers. Yeah. If you act out, yeah, you're going to be at gunpoint. So in that aspect, yeah, it's very, very true. Now, in the case of Federal Trade Commission, it's the same way, too. If you break the laws, you're going to end up like Bud Fox or the end of Wall Street, right?
That's not true. That's not true. Look at Wall Street. You know, there's no criminal indictments. These guys caused the implosion of the global economy, and there's not a single criminal indictment. They had 1,000 criminal indictments after the S&L crisis in the early 80s, okay? Every single executive of every single Wall Street firm should be in prison. Should be in prison by now, okay? The fact is that we have a fascist government. The Federal Reserve runs this country. The corporate interests run this country. In other countries, if you look at the dot-com collapse, not a single person went to jail other than recently the Greek family from Adelphia. They went to prison, I believe. But no one else went to jail for all that fraud. Look at Nortel. During the dot-com, Nortel, the executives went to jail. You know why? Because they're based in Canada. U.S. CEOs, U.S. corporate elites, they do not go to prison in this country. If you look at healthcare fraud, you probably hear about, you know, they catch some guy, some doctor, some dentist, or other person engaging in healthcare fraud. They send them to jail.
All right.
When United Healthcare, when Merck Pharmaceutical, when all of these big conglomerates in healthcare commit taxpayer fraud through Medicare and Medicaid in the tunes of hundreds of billions of dollars. In Pfizer's case was hundreds of millions of dollars. Pfizer's case was over a billion. Not a single person goes to jail.
Okay, hold on, Mike. Let's give Eric an opportunity to respond to some of that.
Well,
go ahead,
Eric. Since all of that was rattled off from, you know, 0 to 90 miles an hour in 6.2 seconds, it's kind of hard to address all of it, in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm.
Which can't be addressed. I do research for a living. I've lost millions of dollars for speaking the truth for the people. And, you know, this is pretty frustrating when I have people that have been brainwashed by these myths, by the media, and by their so-called experts who are paid off by the industry. I'm telling you the truth. I have the statistics.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about that, Mike. That's why I have a question.
Okay. Go ahead. Eric.
I was just asking if – okay, so you're saying that the AMA is involved in some of this, because I know that they urge physicians to get malpractice insurance.
Okay.
Wouldn't malpractice insurance companies
just sit there and rub their hands and laugh maniacally whenever some young intern finally gets his residency finished and he gets his sheepskin to hang on the wall, and he can become a pediatrician or any, you know, any sort of endeavor, whether it be a general practitioner, you know, family doctor, whatever. That in and of itself right there is self-perpetuating the problem, is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying about the AMA. Okay.
If I could,
the
if
AMA
I could finish quick. If I, okay,
I
don't
need,
hey, I don't
hey,
need
hey,
a manifesto.
Hey, hey, hold on a
Please.
Minute. Mike,
Please.
allow Eric to finish his thought.
Well, I thought he was finished.
Okay. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, no, I wasn't. I'm just trying to figure out, because what's ended up happening is a vicious cycle that is feeding upon itself. That is part of the problem. You have the drug companies who have to invest all that money in R&D, and you got some people out there who – excuse me, please. Sorry about that.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
Actually, the fact is that the drug companies spend more on marketing and sales than R&D. And if you don't believe that, I suggest that you take a look at Marcia Angel, the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine for 20 years, who basically left because of all the fraud. It's well documented. They spend more money on the and by the way, I have a graduate degree in chemistry, so I'm familiar with, you know, what goes on in R&D, and I can tell you right now, it's marketing and sales. It's not R&D, and that addresses another issue, because you have these drug companies that are actually making profits off of taxpayer-funded research, okay? And that's a whole other topic there, but the AMA, let me tell you about the AMA. The AMA protects the industry, healthcare industry, more so than the SEC protects Wall Street. And you better believe the SEC is a partner with Wall Street. I worked at Bear Stearns and UBS, and I saw the same thing in that industry that I see with all the other industries. These regulatory agencies pretend like they're policing the system, so they go after the small guys. Okay, but when it comes to going after the big guys, they don't touch them. Bernie Madoff is a perfect example. I see. This is a problem, once again. It's not a partisan problem. It's a problem with the way our country is being run by these corporations. Now, the AMA, you want to say something, or can I finish
hold
about
on,
the AMA?
Hold on a minute.
I'm back now, Doc.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure that out, because, and I can understand why you're saying that, Mike, about how they want the little guy, because it's pretty much a slam dunk case, because he can't have the kind of monetary coffers to hire some big time law firm to basically do nothing more than filibuster and run out the clock. Right?
Well, it's more than that. Once again, well, remember what I said.
Like Doc said last night, I'm breaking it down to the lowest common denominator, like he used the example with Paul Revere. We're not going into an entire dissertation about Israel Thistle and how he rode 15 times as far as Paul Revere, okay?
Yeah.
And Doc is laughing at that because I paid attention in class, and the other factor is I'm still mad at you, Doc.
Oh.
I want you to know that right now. Well, no, I'm not mad. I'm aggravated. No, because I was playing it, and my autistic six-year-old heard you say the part about no tooth fairy and no Santa Claus.
Oh,
and
darn it. I'm sorry.
I had to do damage control.
No.
Right.
Oh, no.
It wasn't 100% your fault. It was part of my fault for having it on. But
in this day and age,
you said
when I don't see much of a reason for hope, I would say that the last thing you want to do is let your kid know about Santa Claus. That's about the only hope I would say that they have.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that, and because it helps them keep some of their innocence. But on the other side of the coin, I'm looking at it from a standpoint of the reason why medical malpractice and malpractice insurance was not brought up 18 years ago by Hillary was because at that time, 68% of Congress and both Congress and Senate were made up of lawyers.
Ah.
It's an even higher percentage now. It's 74% now. So of course,
the fact is, medical malpractice serves a good purpose. Okay, it serves
well, it does.
As a.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but I don't agree with the cost of the insurance itself, because the premiums alone are a fourth of a guy's salary per year.
Well, that's not...
They have jumped exponentially in the last 40 years.
That's not necessarily true.
There lies a problem. We have people that are irresponsible, who don't take any personal responsibility, like the lady at the McDonald's drive through who's too lazy to go to Walmart to buy a cup holder for her probe. Right?
I can tell you that
Let's
the
talk
solution
about the parents
is
of the kid in the sidestep van or sidestep truck, the Chevy sidestep that exploded because why? That dipwad couldn't wait for a stop sign.
Dipwad.
That's always ignored in the media. Every single time they got thrown $151 million at him.
Okay. I think that you have to be careful about listening to the solution. The tort reform is not going to do anything. The problem
I'm saying that it's a piece of the puzzle for solution. I'm not saying it is the end all, be all.
I disagree. I think it's at the very bottom in terms of the problem.
No.
There's so many problems.
Hold on, gentlemen. Go ahead, Mike, and then Eric.
I can tell you right now, every single state insurance regulatory commission has been bought off by the insurance industry. They raise the prices whenever they want. What they do is they submit these bogus actuarial statements to the commission until they sign off on it. Okay? There's so many problems. The tort reform is not going to do anything. I think it could actually be worse. Sure. Are there too many ambulance chasers out there? Sure. But the reality is I'd rather have too many than not enough, because otherwise you're going to have a very sloppy healthcare system. Let me give you another example. Did you know that we already have now for-profit medical schools in this country?
Mm-hmm.
For-profit medical schools?
All right, hold on, Mike. Go ahead and respond, Eric.
Well, of course. I don't have a beef with for-profit medical schools.
You don't?
I don't have a beef. No, I don't.
A lot of the physicians, academic teachers do.
You know, the assets of Harvard alone, okay? The assets of Harvard alone equal that of the personal wealth of Bill Gates. There's a problem with that.
That's a whole
other topic, because Harvard is a for-profit school, right? Because they're a private school. Last I checked,
they're not for-profit. They're not for-profit.
I'm talking about schools like IPT
and DeVry. Those are for-profit. Right?
Yeah, I know that.
Harvard's not a for-profit school.
All it is nothing more than a muckety-muck title.
But the point is that, let me explain to you for-profit in medicine, where that can be a problem. When you are a for-profit school, you're going to answer to your shareholders. And when it comes to training physicians, they may decide to skimp out on necessary costs and expenses because they have to answer to the shareholders. You see, it's a big problem.
Hold on, Mike. Let Eric.
Oh, I didn't finish my sentence, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Carry on.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Finish
go
ahead. Off.
Well, I was just going to finish up and say, so as we continue to try and address the physician shortage that we have in this country, which has been created by the AMA, by the way, and I can tell you why in a second if you want. As we try to address that, there's going to be more for-profit medical institutions in this country. There's going to be more HB1 visa physicians in this country. So we do need to maintain this system of checks and balances through the legal system and the medical claims. There's no doubt about that.
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, the thing that I was going to point out was that a for-profit, if you want to go there, because that's going to allow you to go ahead and go to, say, somebody like Merck or Glaxo or whoever, and you want to work in their R&D side, okay? Now, let's face it. 100% of R&D is not underwritten by the United States government, by grants and whatnot. Not 100% of it. And anybody who would believe that is pure folly. Second,
in the pharmaceutical in the pharmaceutical industry, I can guarantee you that the vast majority is.
Okay, vast majority is not 100%.
No, I know, but nevertheless, the vast majority is. In other words,
we have companies that are making
money off of your tax dollars. They're making money off your tax dollars that you funded for research, and they're charging you the highest price for prescription drugs in the world. The pharmaceutical industry is a huge racket, just like the health insurance industry in this country, and just like the larger part of the whole medical industrial complex. People need to realize, let me tell you something, if they don't wake up soon, this country, people are going to die in this country with no assets.
You sound like Alan Grayson that the government wants people to die quickly.
No, the Republicans want you to die quickly.
That's right. I'm sorry. I didn't want to do that. But I didn't want to.
You got to be specific when it comes to a douche like Alan Grayson.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, let me ask you, Doctor. Is it Roberts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
true. Robert. What do you feel about the Ryan plan?
I have studied the Ryan plan mostly because of all the controversy surrounding it, just to be able to speak intelligently about it. And quite frankly, I think it's sort of a cousin of what George Bush wanted to do with Social Security.
Right.
And I agreed with Bush's solution to Social Security, and I agree with this plan as well.
Do you still agree with Bush's solution to Social Security?
I do indeed.
Really? With all of the stock market scandal and its scams? Are you kidding me?
Well, let me explain why I agree. I'll explain why I agree with it. It's because, quite frankly, I'm doing very well in the stock market, and I think if I had control of my Social Security funds, I'd probably have parlayed now into quite a stash.
Well, I can tell you this from experience in having managed several hundreds of client accounts.
Mm-hmm.
While you may be doing good now,
mm-hmm.
It'll catch up to you.
Well,
and
I'm turning it all into gold now.
From that aspect of am I doing good? We have to look at it from the aspect of what does privatization actually do? Number one, it brings $1 trillion in fees to the Wall Street, okay? Number two, what it does is it means that your Social Security assets are going to be hitting the retail market, which means you're going to be paying higher fees for your investments.
Okay, but hold on, Mike. Let me just say this. What's the alternative? Let the government...
Run
my program into the ground and allow the government it's absolutely true that Social Security is going to be broke soon. I'd rather manage.
No, that's actually not true. That's not true. That's actually a myth.
Okay.
I addressed this 5 years ago in my book.
Whoa,
here's the reality of Social Security. Okay.
Okay.
The reality is that Social Security was always designed as a pay-as-you-go system. Now, the only problem with Social Security from the consumer standpoint, or the beneficiary standpoint, is that we have a demographics problem. Okay?
So wait a minute now. Is it not true that the government is taking Social Security funds from the Social Security fund? Place
yeah,
where
they have
it and
it
using
it
for,
not,
and using
that,
it for other
does,
purposes.
That does not say anything about Social Security. That says something about our government.
Okay, but my
it's a money shuffle, just like with GM and Chrysler repaying their loans. It's a money shuffle. That's all they're doing.
All I'm saying
is this.
I would much rather
if we did not pay into Social Security, if we don't do anything to improve the long-term solvency of Social Security, it would continue to pay out beneficiaries. It would pay out even beyond the solvency date. It would pay out 87% indefinitely. The solution to Social Security is actually quite simple. All we have to do is raise the payroll tax threshold to about $140,000.
It seems to me, Mike.
Medicare is a big problem.
Mike, it seems to me like you have all the answers and that you should be running for president, Senate, or congressional seat. Because
Dr. Jones, don't you understand how it works? People with all the answers, people that want to do the right things for the right people, don't get elected to office. You get elected because you do the right things for the wrong people.
I was being slightly
Obama never had the answers. Obama doesn't know what's going on.
I was being slightly facetious. But here's the thing. I would much rather, still, I have managed to manage my money well. And under Bush's plan, I think that if his plan were to have allowed to have been allowed to be carried into practice, I believe that I would have more money for retirement based on that, based on the amount of money that I would receive through Social Security managing it on my own, than if the government.
Social Security is not a retirement plan.
It's not a retirement plan. It would be part of a portfolio for me.
I think you're looking at it wrong. You're looking at it as an insurance plan. If you're managing your own money, you can roll up and lose it all. Hold on, Mike.
I'm not looking at it wrong. I'm 49 years old. I'm a fairly intelligent young man. I know exactly what in Social Security is. I know where it comes from. I know where it goes. And I know that if I were allowed to manage whatever funds that were available to me, that I would do a lot better job of it than the United States government. That's all I'm saying.
Hold on, Mike.
You and I have been monopolizing this portion of the conversation. Let Eric get in.
I want to respond to what you were saying.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
Didn't George Bush have a different proposal that he had brought forth? He had the first proposal that he was talking about during the 2000 election. And wasn't there a modified proposal that he was putting together for 2003?
Yes.
Okay, so that 2003 is basically where he was including the stuff that Al Gore was talking. Well, I mean, Al Gore was talking about a lockbox, basically, where the government couldn't dip in. And isn't that also what George Bush was talking about in his modification of it?
Here's what I think about Social Security and Medicare, okay? If the government says, well, we want to shaft you. You've been paying payroll taxes all these years. And by the way, we didn't even used to charge an annual premium for Medicare. Now it's $120 a month. By the time I'm 65, it's probably going to be $500 a month. So they're changing the rules of the game, just like the health insurance industry does when they need more money. My point is this. People are saying, you know, the whole Ryan plan. Listen, forget the Ryan plan. We'll give you vouchers if you pay us taxes. If they want to do that, I say cut out the payroll taxes and let me go at it on my own. Okay? That's what I say. Otherwise, it's a fool's game. It's a complete fool's game. And if the government says, well, we're going to privatize Social Security, I say, you know what? Forget it. Just cut out my Social Security taxes and let me go at it on my own. But the worst thing is going to be if you keep paying the taxes and you let the government decide how they're going to allocate the funds. And the privatization is a complete disaster. I mean, can you imagine if the privatization would have passed, the stock market falls by 60%? Are you kidding me?
There are other places to invest one's money. Hold on just one moment, Mike. We have another call on the line on the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. 765, you're on.
Hi, I just have one question.
Ask it.
Guess, no, honestly, he is talking as though Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, correct? Benefits coming in equals benefits going out. If that's
me?
His policy, or if that's what he wants, say it.
Actually, it's designed as a pay-as-you-go system, not a Ponzi scheme. A Ponzi scheme is defined as whereby you have to pay more into the system in order to pay the people exiting out, such that the people at the bottom never benefit.
Okay,
Social Security is not the way. The only problem with Social Security is Mike.
Please allow another caller to get in here. I thought he ended. All right, I'm appreciating what you're saying here. Really, I am, but I'd like to everybody to get a chance to go ahead and contribute. So go ahead.
I think there's some problems with the delay in hearing. I think that's the issue.
Okay, I understand. Okay. 765, go ahead.
Yeah, so the basic solution, which I think we all can agree on, is that if you told seniors today that they would get paid a proportionate amount as to what comes in, that would not fly politically, okay? And that's not going to fly politically 30 years from now. And if it's a come-in as it goes out scheme, admit it. But you won't admit
it. Of course not.
How is my autistic 6-year-old going to pay in? You want to help me out with that?
I can tell you another. Well, your autistic child would qualify for Social Security benefits, I believe.
Of course he does, but I had to go ahead and get him qualified first of all, so he can have an official disability classification. I had to go through all these hoops, which they might as well have set on fire to make it more of a better circus. But I had to go through all these hoops just to go ahead and get his classification correct just for school systems and stuff like that. Now, backing up a little bit to what you guys were talking about when you're comparing, technically I think Doc was trying to compare the Ryan plan versus Obamacare. I can tell you right now, and he's already looked at the Ryan plan, and I already know that Doc already knows this, there are fewer limitations of pre-existing conditions under the Ryan plan. In other words, there's fewer cutoffs than there are under Obamacare. That is the reason why the term death panel came about.
Can I tell you about the Ryan plan?
It was just an off-the-cuff term, and there's been nothing else really brought forth because none of the Democrats are going to say that because why they got Kathleen Sebelius already – by the way, don't you love her laser work? Doesn't she look pretty now for almost 70 years old? She looked awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think any Obamacare would have covered for any of that elective work.
There's not a single expert in anything in Washington. They're not experts. They're failures, okay, all of them. And that's the way it works because they don't want real solutions for the people. They want to appease their corporate interests. That's how it works in this country. That's why so we need to get rid of lobbyists, okay? But, going back to the individual talking about Social Security doesn't, you don't get out what you pay. It is tagged to U.S. government treasuries, the interest rate on that. And it is a social safety net. And I can tell you, based upon my experience on Wall Street, understanding the financial matters, that you really need to have an insurance plan. You can't think of it a greedy motive. I want more out of my Social Security. Because I can tell you, I will guarantee you, you're going to get blown out in your investments at some point. I will guarantee it. Now, hopefully, when that happens, it won't be towards your retirement, so you'll have time to recover. I mean, you think about it. You have the best fund managers in the world who got blown out. The best guys, they didn't see this coming. They got blown away. So for people who are amateurs, investors thinking that they can manage their funds and do better, and so I think you're fooling yourself. I've seen that over and over again.
Hold on, Mike. I'm not talking about Bush.
I'm not talking about his plan. I'm saying the whole system in general. Would you tell seniors that if it is possible for the federal government to say, according to federal, fiscal year 2011, we took in this much revenue according to Social Security, that means that your check are going to be X amount. Would that make Social Security solvent forever, correct? So is that not your solution? I'm not saying the individual, you raise it to 140 or 150, and the longer they wait, the higher they're going to have to raise it. Social Security is actually...
Hold on, Mike. Go ahead, 765.
Oh, I'm just saying that it is not, I'm not talking about the individual person. I understand the individual person might get, you know, he might get hosed or he might get shortchanged. But let's just say if his solution is correct at the national level, okay, let's say that X amount of dollars gets taken in from Social Security and X amount of dollars and goes out to Social Security. And so let's say that they say to the seniors, okay, in fiscal year 2013, you get this, you know, this month, this much per month in your Social Security check because that's how much we took in. That would make Social Security solvent forever.
It's not, that's not how
that is,
not
that
how
is what he advocates.
Bill.
That's what he advocates, basically. And why
well,
is that a deal?
That's not how it's calculated.
Because you admit then that it is a Ponzi scheme that we have,
no, it's
you
not
know,
how,
all this money
it's
that we have
not
theoretically is not there. It's gone. So let the people, you know, tell them that the amount that's coming in at a certain year and you are going to get a certain amount based on what came in Social Security taxes for that year. That makes it solvent, but that's not politically correct. And that'll never happen.
Well, it's also not fair because you're stealing money from the people if you do that.
How is that the case,
Mike?
That's
the reality.
Well,
that's
because
not. That's the system.
The Social Security, the American benefit is a kind of a complicated formula. I mean, some of you may understand it, but the bottom line is that it is tagged to not only the obvious, you know, your employment hours and your income is over, but it's also tagged to a certain percentage interest rate based upon U.S. government securities. So it is actually growing with time. So therefore, if you came out and said, well, we're going to give you for your benefits as much as you put in, then you're robbing the person through the rate of the compounded interest rate that they would have been receiving.
I'm not saying that the person. I'm not saying that they should get what they put in. I'm saying, which you have admitted, that it's not feasible for them to get what they put in. So in theory, that it is a Ponzi scheme.
The only problem with Social Security is this, okay, is it pay-as-you-go system. Therefore, it only works without any disruptions if you have the same number of people going in as you have coming out. Because we have the baby boomers retiring, that is causing a problem whereby there's more benefits being paid out. So in order to change that, all you have to do is you raise the payroll tax. Now, at some point, there will be a surplus if they did that, okay? But
there is a theoretical surplus right now. So that theoretical surplus has been spent.
Well, right now there is, of course. Right now there is, but we're not talking about right now. Right now is not the problem with Social Security. We have to look ahead, right?
Well, it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
But my point is that Social Security from the beginning was designed this way. And it was designed in a very prudent manner. Social Security was probably the best social program this country's ever had.
It's been successful. It has been successful, but it also has been used in as a slush fund, if you will, or backup cash to fund a lot of other different projects. And thus, it's not a myth. It's not a myth. And it's not. Hold on. Let me finish. I'll be brief on your show, Mike. Obviously this is your show. I believe that Social Security has been dipped into far too many times, and I do not believe that it is a myth that Social Security is in jeopardy. I believe that it is, and there are strong indicators that it is indeed in jeopardy of being insolvent. Do you disagree with that?
I completely disagree. I suggest you read my book. I have a whole chapter on Social Security.
I sure will.
I'm the only guy that was talking about the entitlement crisis 5 years ago. I was talking about a Dow 6000 in that book.
Hold on, Mike. 765, go ahead.
I have to say that do you not use those theoretical surpluses that have been built up from Social Security since, you know, when it was enacted from all throughout the 30s and the 40s and 50s? are you not using those theoretical surpluses that have been built up, which are not there, which have been spent? Are you using those to claim that is that it is it, you know, it's solvent and that we can pay, you know, the next generation? Or are you acting as if that's not there? Because it's not there. You understand that.
Mike?
I don't know what you're talking about, theoretical surplus. Social Security is currently solvent. It is generating a surplus. It's going to, the surplus is going
you're
to be ending soon, but it is solvent. Social Security
that
is not an issue.
Washington
has chosen to attack our social programs, our entitlements, to pay for these costly, useless wars. Okay? Don't be fooled.
Okay. Go ahead, 765.
I'm with him as far as the wars and everything, but that does not mean anything. The money has been spent. The Social Security Trust Fund is gone, okay? So if you accept that premise, then you have to believe that Social Security today is a Ponzi scheme. And if you want to use these theoretical, you know, surpluses that have been building up for the last 50 years, you also then believe
let me
that,
ask
you know,
where did you come to this conclusion? Did you read it somewhere?
Okay.
Because I can tell you, I see all these people talking about Ponzi schemes, and I'm telling you, it's not a Ponzi scheme. It's not
I'm
a Ponzi scheme
where
at all.
The money is. I'm asking you that the Social
Washington
Security
and,
money
and
that
Dr.
has been
Roberts,
built up throughout the last 10 years,
yes,
that money
there. Washington has been dipping their hands into the fund, but that's not a problem with Social Security. That's
how
a problem
do you
with
know?
The
okay, let me ask you. Let me ask you, Mike, flat out, right here and right now. How do you know that Social Security is not that Social Security is there? That it's going to be there? That everything is all right? How do you know that?
Well, all you have to do is look at the studies and look at the Social Security Trust Fund annual report. Which is
there you go.
500 pages.
I read
those reports. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. 765.
Social Security is going to be there. If you actually do some research on it, you will understand. I have a chapter in my book. I explain the whole situation. And by the way, I wanted to mention that privatization actually ends up reaming minorities and females.
Okay. I understand your book.
Okay. Go ahead. 765.
But. And unless you get past that point to where you acknowledge that the Social Security Fund has been spent, it's not there. We don't have a surplus of money. And so if you want to tap into the Social Security Trust Fund, you then have to tap into general revenue of the government because it's not there. And so as a Democrat, you then have to supplant that money that you would spend to fund Social Security, you have to take that revenue from some other program. You understand that?
Are you talking about Washington dipping their hands into the trust fund? Or
yes,
are you saying it's insolvent because it's fundamentally lost money on its own inherently? Or are you saying that Washington has taken money out of the Social Security? Which one are you saying?
I'm saying that, of course, they have taken that money. You're saying
okay.
that money exists.
Well, it's there in terms of promissory notes of the U.S. Treasury, okay?
Okay.
I mean, if you want to go
right
back, if you want to go back, that aspect,
we're
completely done. Okay. But it's not like they took the money and they're not going to put it back.
Hold on, Mike. Let me jump in here for a minute, Mike. America is so. Is it a fallacy that America is broke?
Well,
it
depends upon how you define that. Would I say that they're broke? Of course not. Okay, let's look at the debt issue. Okay, mm-hmm. The bottom line is I mean, and by the way, I thought in my life, and I've written this. I said to myself, you know, George Bush is going to, you know, it's going to be a long time before any president can beat his record of destroying the economy. And lo and behold, within the first 2 years, Obama exceeded Bush. And I
are
have
we
to
broke?
Believe,
are we broke or not, Mike?
On, I'm sorry?
Are we broke or no?
Well, no. The answer is no, we're not broke.
Why is it that so many economists and politicians are saying that we are?
Well, maybe the economists first. as far as politicians, they're going to tell you scare tactics. Remember the scare tactic, WMDs? Remember the scare tactic, we have to bail out the banks? Right?
Yeah,
politicians lie to get to scare people. Tell me the economists, and I'll tell you if they're credible.
So we're not, so according to you, America is solvent, strong financially. We're on great financial footing.
I did not say that. I did not say that. I didn't say that we were strong.
Because here's the thing. Let me say this. You know, you're saying that Social Security is there, the money's there in the form of a promissory note from the U.S. government. Okay, I dig that. But there's word going around all over the place, all over the whole wide world, that America is broke. So that would mean that the promissory notes for Social Security are not worth the words that just came out of my mouth to take to the bank to cash.
Who's saying America's broke? You have to understand the people.
Everybody. My dog said America was broke this morning. Everybody's saying that America is broke.
There's nobody in the media who has any credibility or they're lying.
Not just the media. It's not just the media.
It's the people pushing gold. It's the gold dealers.
It's not just the media.
America is not broke. America is not broke. Okay? Let me explain to you why. Okay? Number one.
Come on, Mike.
Who's going to make us pay our debt back? You think China's going to make us pay our debt? We have the guns.
You are fundamentally denying that the federal government has spent the Social Security Trust Fund. Are you saying that they have
I
not?
I think that's what Mike is saying.
I didn't deny or concede that at all.
Okay.
I didn't deny.
So I would like
I did,
to know. I would
I did,
honestly
I did, I did.
Like to know, since I'm young, I'm 28 years old, I would honestly like to know where then we are going to take the supposed, what is it, $1.5 trillion right now that is in the Social Security Trust Fund, which is spent, okay? I would like to know how we are going to recoup that trust fund. Along
you need to understand
with
how,
the
you
$1 trillion
how
deficit,
it works.
We're now running
you,
$1 trillion.
You fully understand that. I mean, you know, you have to understand. You're talking to the guy, the leading expert in the world who predicted this stuff, who was banned by the media, who tried to stand up for the people, warn the people, explain the myths out there. And the problem is that people, there's extremes in this country.
The real answer is in the middle.
People don't want to acknowledge the middle because the middle is too complicated to understand. They want to go with extremes. America's broke. No, America's doing great. Well, the truth lies somewhere in between that.
I'm with you that America has serious, serious problems. And what you're advocating means that we are on even a more serious trajectory that you will admit because you are trying to say that money is there.
I think I understand the problems and the solutions.
The obligations that we have set forth in the next two or three, four decades, since that money is not there, we will then have to pull that money from other resources, which a good liberal would object to, correct? You don't want to pull those resources from helping jobs or Gramsci or welfare or anything like that. You don't want to take that money from them. But you understand that since that money is gone and since that money is then going to have to be paid out to older people, that money has to be offset from the budget?
The money's not gone, okay?
And you base that on a really thick government report?
Listen, the money is gone, just like the money is gone to fund the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Give me a break, okay?
Oh, come on. That is part of the budget.
You're speaking in, you've been speaking in terms of, in very abstract, sort of oblique, roundabout terms and explaining how you can be so sure, how you are so sure that America is solvent, America is not broke, and that Social Security.
I haven't had a chance to explain fully. I said a sentiment you kind of want to go to someone else.
Well, no. We have a limited amount of time, Mike, and everybody wants to, there's three of us here now. There was four. So we have a limited amount of time.
Let me explain something to you. Let me explain something to you. This is how the key of the world works, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is how the U.S. empire works. This is what virtually no one realizes, although it's pretty simple. We can print as much money as we want. Now, I'm not for all this stuff. We should end the Federal Reserve. We should end the debt. But the fact is that we can print as much money as we want. Do you know why? Because the whole world has to use the dollar to buy oil and to buy commodities. That is how we tax the rest of the world. In the past, empires, the Roman Empire would tax its member nations by buying collecting taxes. We do a different tax. We export inflation. Okay, that's the reality.
Printing more money, quantitative easing. Go ahead, 765.
Well, I mean, that's your solution? I mean, come on now. I mean, that's...
I didn't say it was a solution. I'm telling you how the world works. I'm telling you what the oligarchs are thinking.
That's the problem. That is the problem. You understand? That's the problem. That's why the world goes around in a circle. That's the reason that we have the problems that we have. And you just think naively that we honestly have that money. That money
is gone. I think that you need to go and educate yourself on these issues because I'm the leading expert on this. Matter of fact, I have a $100,000 reward issued for anyone who can prove that there's someone who matches my track record. I you're welcome to submit it. So you need to understand, I'm not a coffee table. Hold on, Mike. This is what I do for a living. I advise very large institutions. Okay? I predicted this whole depression in detail.
Go ahead, 765. Mike is going on.
That's public information. We can all pull up the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. We can all pull up the budget of the United States government. Okay? It's clear as day. You understand? I have an education. I can read a balance sheet. The Fed puts it out.
Are you doing this?
You're telling me that the obligations of Social Security is on budget. That's something that you can look at the government records and you can tell me that is a payment. That's something that is on the government records that they can pay that out. And they have a plan to pay that out, and that is something that is above record, and that is something clear for everybody to see.
I think you've been listening to too many neocon talk shows, like Rush Limbaugh and these clowns that don't have any expertise in what they're talking about. They're only qualified to talk about Britney Spears.
I hate Rush Limbaugh.
Hey, you guys are getting out of line here. I'm a big Rush Limbaugh fan.
I take offense at the fact that you need to understand you're getting your ideas from the media. I do not pay attention to the media. I am a professional full-time researcher with the best track record in the world on this economic collapse than anybody, and I have backed that up with cash.
I appreciate that, Mike. But here's my issue with what we've been talking about here tonight. You've talked about the problems. You have pretty much guaranteed your pinky finger and your big toe that America is on financial stable ground, and you're very clever not to say that. Here's the thing: is America solvent? Are we on good financial footing? I'm asking you right here and right now. Give me a one-word answer, please. Yes or no?
Yes, of course we are. But we're not in good shape.
And more importantly, Americans are in deep trouble.
Okay,
understand how they're being hoodwinked.
Okay,
by
765, go ahead.
No.
We're not. And why do you say we're not?
Because of the same reason that he brings up as far as he tries to prove that we are on solid financial ground because we do not account for Social Security and Medicare in the future. And the reason we do not is because maybe rightfully so or maybe it might be wrong. We do not account for that on the budget is because we understand as a nation that it is a Ponzi scheme and then in the end, we do not owe seniors their Social Security check. We do not owe seniors the Medicare benefits, they have paid into. That in the end, it will be, as he said, it is a, I forget the term he used, it is a, you know, basically it's a pay-as-you-go system. And I'm not somebody who is adamantly opposed to that, but if you believe that, then you have to admit it. It's a pay-as-you-go system.
Yeah.
And,
all right,
and there's
Mike,
nothing wrong with that, but you have to admit it.
Do you admit it, Mike?
I'm actually the one that told you guys that it was a pay-as-you-go system. Don't you recall?
All right. Yes, you
That's
did.
What
I'm the one that actually I'm the one that actually corrected the gentleman when he said it was a Ponzi scheme. I actually was the one that said, here's how it works. Okay.
That is a pay-as-you-go system. Do you understand? Because you are trying to negate the benefits that are supposed to be paid, and I'm telling you that the benefits that are supposed to be paid are not going to be paid, and that it is only a pay-as-you-go system.
That's
so
not
we
true.
Agree
I mean,
it's a pay-as-you-go
system.
You
know the future. It's very easy to pay. If the government did nothing, they did nothing until the problem becomes 2036, I believe, something like that. If they did nothing up to that time, after that, what happens? I'll tell you what happens. Everybody will get 87% of the promised benefit indefinitely. That's if nothing is done. Does that sound like a crisis to you?
I understand that. Correct.
Do you
want to perpetuate that system so that
you understand the only problem
so that suddenly in 2037, suddenly you want seniors to get 87% of the benefit?
No,
I want to transition because I understand that it is not going to happen. I want to transition them into the reality that they cannot get their full benefits and they cannot get what they are, they believe is.
The solution is simple.
Benefits.
The solution is very simple. I said it numerous times. All that needs to be done is you raise the payroll tax cap from about $110,000 to $140,000. So in other words, you're paying Social Security taxes. It doesn't stop at 110. If you're making more than 110, you pay until you make 140. Thereafter, you're not paying anymore. It's very simple. It's not like we haven't raised it before. It's been raised recently. Okay.
Okay.
It's a very simple
so what
solution.
Happens, what happens
but then Washington
your,
does not want
radical.
To address that solution because they want to actually take away your money. It's amazing to me how the same people who stand to lose the most have been brainwashed to fight for these oligarchs. Are you kidding me?
What you just laid out is correct. That's correct.
Hold on, Mike, please give 765 the chance to respond.
What you just laid out is correct. I absolutely believe what you just said is correct. So, what happened to your Social Security Trust Fund? Because that was supposed to fund the whole system until 2037.
No.
You understand?
It's only
what you just said. Totally contradicts everything that you have tried to
Actually,
lay out.
Actually, not at all.
I understand that it is a Ponzi scheme and that the people who starting in what year? What year that you just said? If we raise payroll taxes, when will it be solvent so that the people can get the benefits that they were promised?
Dr. Roberts, I refuse to continue this ridiculous argument with this gentleman calling it Ponzi scheme and doesn't understand the simple solution. So if you want me to continue, I will. Otherwise, I'm just going to hang up. I mean, I think...
Well, I mean, hold on now.
The guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm getting ready to
Mike,
say what's on my mind, okay?
Mike,
I don't think that you want that.
Mike, first of all, listen. Mike, he is saying what's on his mind. I mean, everybody has a free an opportunity to express themselves however they see fit. If this is 765's idea and he has his own way of thinking, we accept that, and it's just fine. It's a blog talk radio show where we're all voicing our opinions and in some cases espousing our expertise and showing off how we view the world and it's just conversation, really. It's nothing to take personal. So 765, go ahead.
No, I do take it personal when if my name is Warren Buffett, is he going to talk to me that way? My track record's better than Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett could learn a lot from me.
To Warren Buffett.
Buffett lost $30 billion in 2008 because he didn't see this crisis coming. He got blown out.
I do not like Warren Buffett. So.
Well, my point is that you need to understand here. I don't think that we have a relationship of a debate. We're more of a teacher a student. Okay, if you don't want to accept that, then that's fine. I'm not going to waste any more of my time.
I
sacrificed, and I have lost a prominent position. I have lost millions of dollars in trying to save people like you, speaking the truth. The media has banned me, okay? And I'm telling you, all these ideas that you people are getting, you're getting from the media, you're getting from these so-called experts, and they're liars, they're shills, they're hacks, all of them. If you have media exposure, it is because it's for a good reason. You are supporting one side of the fascist corporate system, period. Otherwise, they're going to shut you out. Just like Tom Cruise in the Today Show 5 years ago when he was on Matt Lauer and he exposed the realities behind prescription drugs. What do? Well, they cut him out of Hollywood and they chastised the guy, called him a wacko. Why? Why did they do that? Because he ticked off the pharmaceutical industry who pays billions of dollars every year in advertising.
On a whole host of things. But me and you could agree on all these things, but I just cannot fathom your stance on Social Security. You are a very intelligent man, obviously. I'm not some scholar, and obviously you know your stuff, and but I just cannot fathom, and I cannot comprehend your idea of the Social Security Trust Fund and why it is there and why it is not there. I have not understood.
I would recommend that you research it, okay? Spend some time and actually research it instead of, you have to understand, when you're talking to someone who's researched these things, has a documented track record and so forth, it's kind of ignorant.
Hold on, Mike. If he's ignorant, then I'm ignorant, and that can't be possible.
Well, I'm ignorant too.
I mean, hold on.
Everybody is ignorant at some point in their life.
But not right now. So listen, I believe that if you cry fire enough, there's some smoke somewhere. And there are those who have suggested over the course of the last 10 years that Social Security is near insolvency, and in fact that the government, the president's Congress, the folks like that ilk are dipping into the Social Security funds and using it for other purposes, and thus creating a situation where there will be a limited amount of funds available for future generations. And I'm not getting this information, like perhaps 765, whose name I don't know, so I'm saying 765. The information is not just coming from the media. It's coming from government officials.
Wait a second. You keep going back to the issue. The bank robbers are robbing the bank, and you're saying, well, the bank is the problem.
I'm not saying the bank is the problem. I'm saying that the
bank.
I'm saying
that
Social Security
funds, it doesn't have anything to do with Social Security.
I'm simply saying that the money's not there.
I do not agree that the funds.
It's not an issue with Social Security. That's the politicians. The Social Security is a great program, and it provides a safety net. People need to understand how the safety net fits in their lives, because right now, things aren't as bad as they could get. Okay.
Agreed.
I tell you right now, in the future, people that think that they will never need Social Security, they're going to need it.
Hold on, gentlemen. I really do appreciate your calling in. I appreciate everybody in the chat room, American Citizen, Antoinette, Kadeen, Cougar, Common Sense, my two great callers, Curly, and Tesla. Everybody, thank you so much for being here. We're under less than 1 minute. This has been great. Come back tomorrow, both of you. I really would appreciate it. So we can talk about the Great Depression. It's going to be great. We're going to talk about the Great Depression tomorrow. It's going to be great. Both of you be back here. Mike, 765, what is your name? Hello?
Let me ask you something, by the way.
No, no, no.
You know
36 seconds left.
You know what the number one expenditure is for the U.S. government?
All right, okay.
Overseas expenditures.
There we go.
War. Military. Dang. We're spending more in military. That's the solution. Stop these wars.
We are done. Game over. Thank you guys.
Okay, have a good night, guys.
Come back tomorrow. Have
Bye-bye.
A good night. Whoo! Boy, we got to keep the devil down in the hole.
When you walk through the garden, you got to watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Down in the hole. You gotta help me keep the devil.